Welcome to the Leadership Labs with DeepRec.ai, a podcast where we delve into the fascinating world of deep tech entrepreneurship, company founders, and venture capitalists. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly, and I'm thrilled to have you join us on this exciting journey. In each episode, we explore the minds behind groundbreaking technologies, the visionaries who dare to push the boundaries of innovation, and the investors who fuel the growth of tomorrow's game changers.
Hello, welcome Vijay Praveen Maharanjan to the podcast. Vijay, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure to be talking to you in your podcast. I'm really looking forward to interact for the next few minutes.
Yeah, no, me too. So for everyone that might not have crossed paths with Vijay before, he's a founder and a CEO at BitsCrunch. So in this podcast, what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about BitsCrunch. We're going to talk a little bit about Vijay's journey as an Indian native data scientist who founded a business, the challenges that comes in itself, the reasons why he chose his business, and the skills that he's developed and honed in on that are not technical, but have big impact in the business world. But I mean, before we jump into that stuff, Vijay, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
I'm originally from Chennai in India, which is down south, and I currently live in Munich. So I live in Germany for the last 10 years, so to say a little more than 10 years. So the reason why I moved to Germany is to do my master's. So I did my master's in electrical engineering way back in 2013 to 2015 in TU Munich, one of the renowned universities here in Germany. And since then I live here. I worked for Volkswagen, Siemens, two of the German OGs in the Web2 space before founding BitsCrunch, which is a Web3 entity, which is focused on NFT analytics and forensics. So far the journey has been surreal. I have to admit that I have learned a lot over the last 2 years into the entrepreneurial world, and I wish I conquer more areas in the coming years to come.
Thanks. Talk to me a little bit about the idea of BitsCrunch. Where it came from, right? Because You've also mentioned you were just working in some German OG companies, right? I'm not saying that they're not innovative, but to go from a Volkswagen to a startup, and not only just any startup, you know, Web3 sort of on the cutting edge, it's not the most direct transition, but it's what you've done. What was your thought process, or how did that all come about?
Nothing against these phenomenal companies, Volkswagen or Siemens. They have been there, done that in the Web2 space. Have spread across multiple nations. In fact, over 100 countries. But then their blockchain moat, their Web3 moat, is quite at the barefoot or these scratches. So I wanted to get into Web3, being a retail investor onto Bitcoins and Ethereums since 2017, 2018, I was actively looking at Web3 space. And since I'm into data science all these years, I wanted to build something on blockchain data. And that's when NFTs picked up, non-fungible tokens, as users might be aware of. So NFTs are a recent sensation, which are digital assets on the blockchain. They became famous in 2021, and until the first half of 2022, I would say. And people went crazy about NFTs. A lot of celebrities, including former US President Donald Trump and major brands like Nike, Adidas, Reddit, Starbucks and Porsche, they were into NFTs as well. So it's a form of getting to an exclusive community and a digital asset class. And that's when I wanted to put my data knowledge into action. So formed a team, put together all the pieces into the mix, And here I am talking to you after 2 years of the journey, having raised a little over $6.5 million, and also from prominent investors. If you look at the investor base, we have got people like Coinbase Ventures, Animoca Brands, Polygon, Chainlink, Crypto.com, GateLabs. So some of the best names in the industry are backing us. And journey is going well.
Yeah, that's incredible. The only thing that I can say is I'm a little jealous I didn't get into NFTs in 2017. I'm more of the person that was born by getting in 2021. But the three pictures behind me are NFTs. I'm in a new house, and finding big poster size art is extremely expensive. You know, you're talking to come framed is like 300-350 euros. So I bought the smallest frames, the biggest frames I could find in IKEA. I took some NFTs that I purchased that I liked. I ran them through some AI tools to increase the pixelation of them to 8K by 8K, printed them out in high quality digital prints and put them in the frames. 12
There you
euros.
go. There you go. There you go. That's one of the best utilities I've seen over a podcast, right?
That's it, right? It's real utility. So look, let's go into it then, and let's talk about the startup, the journey of it, and I guess the why. So you had the idea, you wanted to get into Web3. Where is the why? And I mean the why before then. Where was the why be an entrepreneur? Because again, and not to take away from Volkswagen or Siemens, but they could be kind of seen as like getting a job in the government, right? You could work in there for 40 years, you're safe. They are very safe companies to work for. And you went startup, so still entrepreneurial spirit in there for you. You didn't even work in this. You didn't work with startups much before. You came to Telefonica, Volkswagen, Siemens, and then startup. So it's completely the opposite way.
I'll start with with an amazing thing here. So, you know what? I started this startup BitCrunch amidst pandemic, so peak of the pandemic, and just a week before I decided to call it quits, Siemens announced that they will not be laying off anybody during pandemic. So they came out with an open statement saying there will not be any layoffs in Siemens because of COVID. And that is also exactly when I decided to call it quits and decided to start BitCrunch. And then my boss was like, "Vijay, are you kidding? Are you kidding? Are you gonna start up in this pandemic season? And also amidst all these things, you're picking Web3, which is what in 2021 it was also a questionable topic, right? I mean, still people believe that Web3, it's like a 50-50. They don't fully believe in Web3, but then on the other hand, there are some amazing projects like Polygon, Chainlink, and all these amazing projects are evolving, right? So that was a challenging moment, challenging decision, but the support I received from my wife and also my family was great. So that compelled or sort of that made me move into the startup world. And now I'm glad, I mean, having been in the space for 2 years as an entrepreneur, to be honest, I have learned more than what I have learned in my entire 8 to 10 years of career with Volkswagen or Siemens. Again, nothing to take away from those giants, but then here in a startup, I used to be a sales guy, I used to be a marketing guy, I used to be half legal, half here, half there. So that kind of taught me literally everything in this journey. But then if I was in Siemens or Volkswagen, I used to be a specialized guy. I used to be a data visualization expert, I used to be a data analytics expert. But here in the early days, I literally used to post pictures on BitCrunch Instagram handle. That is where I started, and now we have a team of 35, 36 people, which is quite amazing.
Probably even leaving out the parts where you used to order the stationery. You have
Exactly, yeah, true.
to be there for the team. If there's no pen and paper left, you have to go out to the shops to go back, right?
Thanks.
You don't expect your team to go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've been at the stores literally everywhere. I used to buy utensils, buy paper stationeries for the office at the beginning. So it's like going back to the zero, because Siemens or Volkswagen is more like a government job, as you said. You are more or less settled, and where I work is Munich, Germany, which has one of the most favorable employee laws. So here in Germany, you get a permanent contract. Even if the company decides to cancel it, they have to go through a lot of processes. So I'm more or less settled here. But to break those shackles and come out of this idea, trust me, it wasn't an easy decision. And even today, it feels surreal.
So yeah, I guess if you go underlining reasons, what made you take the jump, right? You said you got the support, but ultimately, you put them on a weighing scale, right? Support, you have safety and support. Support doesn't exactly outweigh the safety. So what was the drive?
One is I wanted to be an entrepreneur the moment I stepped out of my country. So I come from India, where you could have seen a lot of well-performing CEOs in the recent times. I mean, if you look at Google, Sundar Pichai is leading Google, Satya Nadella is leading Microsoft, and then even Twitter's former CEO, not this Elon Musk, but then the former CEO Parag Agarwal also was from India. And then there are so many other prominent Indian names that I can take. But then if you closely relate to these names, they are mostly from United States. They're mostly from the West, mostly from the US. And if you have to name somebody that came out of the European Union, I could barely see no one. So I wanted to be a pioneering leader. I wanted to be an inspiring entrepreneur from EU who could put a face on the map, where even people from India could break all the shackles. There are a lot of language barriers, right? I mean, nothing against EU here, because it's because of the language, I believe. Because in US, it's everything is English. Just with English, you can conquer the whole states. But here, I live in Germany. It's German. If I cross the border, it's a different language. I need to learn French. If I have to be a French entrepreneur, I have to learn something else in a different country. So that probably is a reason for not just Indians, but the foreign nationals to set our footprints here. So I wanted to do that because having been here for 10 years, if this is not the right time, then when is the time, right? And then if I don't do that, then somebody else at some point in time will do that. So I wanted to be the one before someone else does that.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's good that you mentioned it on the language. It's something that I've probably never realized. But when I look back on the larger companies I've worked for, they have all had massive multicultural, multi-language speaking sales teams. They're expensive. That's not something you can do by yourself, right? You can't hire a French guy, a Dutch guy, a Flemish guy, and a German guy. You'd be like, yeah, I'll do the English sales. You guys go ahead.
Totally. Even if we are based out of Munich and India, but then as you mentioned, hiring sales guys here in Europe is a bit expensive, and that's also a challenge that we are slowly overcoming.
What other barriers, or was there other barriers to entry? And I guess I mean this as well in the most nicest way possible, right? It's admirable for you because you said it. There's not many successful Indian businessmen founders in Europe, but yet when you do go to the US, right? There's multiple CTOs, CEOs. We have people in like Alphabet, Google, Microsoft. You've named the right top businesses, but it's not in Europe. Do you feel that there's any other barriers to it, or do you feel that it was just coming down to the language?
Wage and the culture, because if you look at the work-life balance here in Germany or in Europe in particular, it's way different than in the US. Because as I said, They have one of the best employee rules and regulations here in Europe, where you just can't fire somebody, right? If you work for, let's say, Siemens or Volkswagen, you cannot be given a resignation letter or a firing letter overnight. But in US, you could do that. What happened with Twitter? Everybody knows that fact, right? Elon Musk just went in and he cleaned the space within a couple of weeks. That I believe is not possible here in Germany or in any European countries. That is one. And language, as I mentioned, if you look at the Nordic countries, they are again having some of the best laws. Finland, Denmark, Norway, they have the most employee friendly laws, right? So that's probably the reason. And I mean, these are few reasons that came to my mind, but there are plenty of other reasons as well.
Nice. What do you think about the sort of challenges of coming over as a student visa, and then also there is, it's even more difficult, right? You could have 5 years experience and a master's, and it's actually harder to come over to Europe than it is to come over as a student. You're better off coming younger as a student and staying, right?
Entering as a student is, I would say, the easiest entry point. I mean, nowadays people are directly coming here for jobs, but I believe student entry is the best way, because you come here, learn a local education, grab a master's or a bachelor's degree in the country, which is being recognized so well. And you can also convert that to a job seeker visa, which is flexible. I mean, here in Germany, they provide 18 months of job search visa. But trust me, if you have a master's here, if you study well, if you have good grades, you don't really need 18 months. Probably you would need 3, 4 months or 6 months at the max, I would say. So that's one of the best case options. And then you also get to learn the language, right? While you do your master's or while you do your bachelor's, you can make use of the time to mingle with the locals, learn the language, and that can actually help you in finding a job as well.
Good, good. Thank you. Thank you. Now, the good stuff. I just want to talk about electrical engineer turned data scientist turned CEO, right? Multiple different skill sets. I want to sort of come in and I want to talk about specifically what skills you had starting Bits Crunch and then how you sort of developed after that. So if we go in on like the first element of it, if you were to say, I'm a founder now, I've started my business, what did you bring to the table? Like, what was your expertise?
This has not been a straight curve. So I went from electrical engineering to data science and then to an entrepreneur. So it's all about putting together a lot of pieces, a lot of missing pieces in the journey. So I started as an electrical engineer, but then by a bit of luck and opportunity, I ended up as a data scientist at Telefonica, a junior data scientist way back in 2015, 8 years ago. And then I moved into Volkswagen and then went on to Siemens. So these are the best places you can handle data, right? I mean, Siemens or Volkswagen, they probably are one of the top three, top five companies in the whole Germany. And I would say they are probably amongst the top 20 in the world. So the amount of data that I get to handle at Volkswagen or Siemens was close to the best, right? Best in the business. And here also we have this GDPR, right? Which is not so easy. It's a pain in the ass, to be honest, for the people from the West or people from the Asian countries. So to handle such large quantities of data by also following a lot of GDPR laws and regulations, I learned a lot in those MNCs. And when I stepped in as an entrepreneur, like I said, I had to be a sales guy when required. I had to be a marketing guy when I had to do that. So it's all about finding ways to fill in those gaps at the early days. But now I pretty much look after the business side of things. So for instance, I get the big businesses to work for BitScrunch. So for instance, we now work with a couple of Fortune 500 companies as well, which I'm really glad and grateful for. So we work with MasterCard, we work with KPMG and a couple of other big brands in this journey. So now I have moved into bringing businesses using I love to talk. I mean, just in this, what, 30 minutes of conversation, you might have probably seen that. I love talking a lot and I love convincing people with what I build. So it's not just about the convincing ability, but then the tech. Since I'm a tech turned entrepreneur, I know the ins and outs of most of the things that we built at BitCrunch. So in spite of not coding each and every day, I know what works, what doesn't work. So that also gave me an opportunity to interact with big businesses, big brands, big customers, and I was able to communicate with them clearly right at the word said go, right? Most of the sales, what it happens is it takes time, takes massive amount of time, for instance, months or even years to close. But in my case, since I'm a tech turned entrepreneur, for me, it sort of helped me. So I wouldn't say I'm a sales engine, but then sort of it helped bridge the gap.
You understand that you understand what's actually physically deliverable as well.
Yes.
Wanted to ask on that is that point as well then. So we're talking sales. You said you're a chatty guy, right? I mean, it's a very useful tip, and it's a very useful tool to have in your arsenal. Goes against what people would say the status quo, what software engineers is stereotypical hackers in the corner with the hoods up, don't talk, right? Which I totally disagree with. I think it's a very bad thing. It's a very incorrect image that's been painted. But for the very first time, you had to make sales. Did you like it, the first call you
Definitely not. So I
made?
have to be brutally honest here. Early days, I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of lame mistakes, to be honest with you, because there weren't any sales deck or things ready in front of a customer. So I went there with bare hands at some point in time. So it's all about the minor tweaks that I did over the period of time, right? So the first few calls were pretty awful, I have to admit. But then I got better at it after certain repetitions.
Yeah, so it's funny because this is the big thing where I come in. So look, I do sales the whole, probably my last, since I'm like 15.
Sure.
So I've been
Okay.
sales half my life. So it's a long time. It's a long time. I was always just chatty, but where I've always come in, I've never been like the first employee. They've always had, you mentioned the deck, so they've always had processes there. But I think a lot of people completely discredit the idea. I don't even think about, yeah, I'm gonna have a sales process. I'm gonna have to do sales, but you know what? I'm just gonna do it. Because you're not experienced in sales, you don't realize that all good sales team and all good sales people have a list of things they're gonna say, a list of if someone says this, here's your answer, and then here's your follow-up. So you call it like decks, I call that like sales enablement. So when you have someone come back to you that's interested, here's exactly what you send them, here's all your topics, here's your everything, and you set a deadline, we'll speak next week, right? That's looping it in.
Especially in a startup, the journey is understandably clumsy because we don't have process in place, we don't have materials in place, we don't have those follow-ups and sort of email threads in place in order to do certain follow-ups, right? So at the beginning it was like just jumped into the water and then started to learn swimming, how to swim, and that was tough times to be honest. But then once we got the team expanding, once we got funds coming in, we slowly expanded the team, and now we have head of growth, head of sales, head of community. So we now have a process in place. But if I look back, some of the mistakes that I did in the early days even make me feel shy nowadays.
Do you think it was maybe trying to, not to say to spin too much plates, But as a salesperson, to try and be quality in your work, you have to do quantity as well. So you in turn sacrifice the quality element of it. But now you've got a function that can enable quantity and quality.
It's still, I wouldn't call us 0 to 1. We are somewhere between 0.6, 0.7 at the scale of 1. And then it's always an evolving journey, right? I mean, every day is a new learning for an entrepreneur. And I'm pretty happy with the progress so far. And I would say still there is a long way to go.
Yeah, nice. So what would you say if you were to say like your personal journey? So you've told us what it's like, it's been upskilling. Where else has being the tech guy moving into sales helped you, or what other skills has it benefited you?
Require a follow-up call with the tech team to stress on something. Rather, I can answer it by myself on the first attempt. So there were cases where I was able to fast track the communication. I was directly able to go into the third or fourth call after my first call itself. So I could potentially skip the couple of tech calls that are involved. So these are cases that help me in the earliest point of journey. But nowadays we have a process. We go through a process. I don't sit on the first sales call nowadays, as there are so many people there in the team who can look after that. But then, yes, those sort of know-hows, the knowledge base that I brought in was helping me at the beginning.
Right. Where did you get the information to make a good sales process?
Like I mentioned, there are tons of materials available on YouTube or on Google. Nowadays we have ChatGPT. I wish we had ChatGPT back in 2021, 2020s. But it's not too late. Nothing is too late. So we have a lot of materials, right? We have not just on Google or YouTube. We have other sources as well. We have so many Instagram pages that teaches you sales. We have so many Facebook pages that teaches you how to be better at sales. So it's all about grabbing the best materials that are available and optimizing your knowledge. So like I said, practice makes a man perfect, right? That is a proverb. So it definitely is the case.
Nice. I want to ask around something that I know isn't easy, but you've done an excellent job, right? You've fundraised quite well, from, and also you've grown quite well. So there's actually two questions I'd kind of like to ask around this. But if we talk about fundraising, let's say seed round and thereon after, what strategy were you setting yourself? Did you know what you wanted or how you wanted to present before your very first pitch? Or then how would you reevaluate yourself as you sort of done more?
Honest, we failed in a couple of fundraisers. So it was not my first fundraise attempt that gave me money. So I made a total mess in my first attempt where I was not even sure about some of the startup terms. I was wondering about a burn rate, runway, and all those simple terms in the startup world, right? That's how I started because I had nothing to do with startup world. I was pleasantly working with Volkswagen and Siemens. I was doing what has been assigned to me. But then to suddenly step into the entrepreneurial journey, I had to learn a lot, even from the basic words. So the first couple of fundraisers were so awful that I wanted to forget that now. And the third fundraise, which was the seed, we raised 750K, which I now believe it's way too less for what we are building. So these were the early mistakes that we made. I mean, if I would have raised it now, I would have raised a minimum of 2 to 3 million in the seed itself. But then the valuations that we have set back in 2021, and also the NFT market was not that famous back in time, because now we have so many brands. You can name brands after brands stepping into NFTs. But back in 2021, people were questioning that this will evolve, right? So it was a mix of so many factors. But I'm glad. I mean, I was able to raise 3 times seed, and then a private round, and then a pre-series A. So in total, we have raised close to $6.5 million, which is not easy, especially in the Web3 space. So glad to be in the position where we are right now, but still could have done better. There are always ifs and buts in the journey, right?
Yeah. And again, I want to ask this one because you have been that sort of electrical engineer turned data scientist turned entrepreneur. They expect to see a lot of stuff from sales numbers. At this time, you weren't highly experienced in sales. They expect to see all these forecasts on expenditure. I mean, it's a brand new company. You don't even know what your next 6 months is going to be like spending wise, never mind 12, 18 months. So how did you prepare yourself to have, we call them guesstimations of these numbers, even for you to present and for them to sort of challenge you on?
So I'm blessed with a big network, because when I was with Siemens or Volkswagen, I used to go to a lot of conferences. I used to present in a lot of conferences. I used to be a TED speaker, TEDx speaker. I have been at a couple of TEDx stages. I have been a keynote speaker in various stages. So with that, I used to have close to 52,000 people follow me on LinkedIn, right? So that community, that connections helped me in the early days. So when I need something, I used to get advices from the best of the best. I used to go and search for sales directors, sales lead, head of sales in my network. I drop them a text. If I drop 10 texts, I at least get a couple of responses. So I then get into a conversation. I learn from the best. So I did this similar thing at the beginning. So it's I have to thank a lot of people who knowingly or unknowingly helped me in this journey.
You know what? It's funny because I do this stuff all the time. I do content. I look for speakers. I reach out to people in my space. I ask them, look, when I was a new manager, I reached out to like six people that I knew were good, that I had mutual connections with. All six spoke to me, right? I was taking the notes. I was prepared to do it. And I mean, I'm doing recruitment now for 8, 9 years. Nobody ever asks me. You know, I never get a message on LinkedIn, and I always think why? Even people in my own teams don't say why, you know. And I think it's just a very simple thing to do. You know, ask
Exactly,
someone
right?
for a coffee, buy them lunch. You know, I'd love to find out how you built your business, how you're so successful at what you
Exactly.
do. Can I buy you lunch and ask you questions for 90 minutes?
Exactly the text that I used to send when I started this journey. So I used to write people. I used to tell them that I'll interview them, right? Because I have a big network. When people see 50,000 connections on LinkedIn, they used to jump right into the call. They used to do a podcast. They used to do a recording. So what you are doing now, right? I mean, we are on a podcast right now. So I used to offer them a podcast in exchange for the conversations that we have, or I used to buy a coffee for them if they are in and around Munich. I used to travel to Hamburg or Frankfurt just for a lunch, just to meet somebody who have been there, done that.
Yeah.
So early days was a lot of hustle. I used to go here and there before making BitScrunch into a small fort now.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. So I do think, like, people look at coaches, they look at mentors in a longer term sense, right? That you get someone, you've got to have plans with them every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks. I mean, I personally feel like I started this podcast, this must be like my eighth interview in 3 weeks.
Well,
And I'm telling you, the content that I'm getting out of this, I mean, I'm getting free mentorship and coaching without anyone even realizing. I didn't realize that at the start. That was not my intention. It wasn't to the level that it was, but it's actually been so inspirational that, after my episodes, I'm like fired up, right? Because you speak to someone that's so good at what they do, and I'm sure you had that experience as well.
Knowledge sharing that happened in the early days with those coffee meetups or lunch or grabbing a beer here in Germany. I mean, Germany is known for its beer, right? We celebrate Oktoberfest like crazy. So The conversations that happened over a beer, over a coffee, helped me a lot, and that can never be bought with money, right? If you buy a coffee for somebody, and if there is a knowledge transfer for like an hour or two, that is irreplaceable, right? So the amount of knowledge that I got from various sales guys, various marketing guys, various legal guys, for instance, helped me a lot in the early days. And also I was able to map the connections. If I don't really know something, then I know whom to contact. So I know, let's say, Anthony is a sales engine who has been doing sales for the last 15 years. So now that I have met you, seen you in close quarters, the moment I see a big sales opening, there is a sales head or a country head for sales, then I know whom to contact, right? I'll drop you a text saying, "Hey, Anthony, Microsoft or even BitScrunch is looking for head of sales in EU," right? So that's the beauty of connections, getting connected with people and reaching out to people. So that's the beauty.
Very strategical. Did you have that in mind? Did you feel like it was going to be as beneficial as it was, or did you get your first taste of how much you benefited from it and be like, I'm just going to do more of this?
But not all the conversations were pleasant. I also have to admit that, because if you meet 10 people, not all the 10 provides value. Sometimes people, not everybody is same, right? So sometimes you meet crappy people. Sometimes you meet boring people as well. So it's a trade-off. So
Sometimes
not all the
they just
ones.
wanted the free coffee.
It's all about a trade-off. But then I was glad that my initial conversations took off really well, because I used to have a bit of conversations before I meet them in person, right? So I used to chat, I used to exchange ideas over chat before I get to decide that if I should meet that person or not, because it's time at the both ends, right? It's my time and it's their time. So I don't want to waste their time as well. I am always mindful about time. So yeah, it's a trade-off, and happy that it paid off.
Nice. Good. Ready for some quick fire questions? Start off. A book, a podcast, or a piece of content that you would recommend for other leaders?
I'm a tech savvy guy, so I used to read a lot of news and tech news. So I'm a big fan of Sriram and Aarti. So Sriram is now a general partner at A16Z, one of the famous venture capitals in the world. So yeah, I love listening to Sriram and Aarti podcast.
Nice. What are your three non-negotiables when it comes to leadership? And that could be the way that you set yourself up or the way that you interact and work with your team.
Responsibility when something goes wrong, but then I celebrate people whenever something works really well. So I put the team first when we win. I put myself forward when something crashes or when something goes wrong. So it's the responsibility and the commitment. So I used to commit to a lot of things, be it targets, be it sales, be it numbers after numbers, even for the investors. So I used to be a committed guy, and then keeping the team happy, that was also my priority as well, because the outcome is good if the team is happy, right? So I always say to my team that I am a CEO, that means Chief Entertaining Officer. So in a way that I would love to entertain people, would love to keep them happy and engaging. There are no hierarchies for now, because we are a very small team. 30 is moderate, not so small, not so big. So anybody can reach out to me or anybody in the team. So that's the freedom that we give to people, and that shows in the results. We could see the results in a good way as people are taking ownership.
Nice. Do you have a very like satisfying moment or a moment where you felt great success as a leader?
Once when BitScrunch, the brand, got featured in the New York Times Square, because it's always been a monumental feeling. I was there in New York when the screens were lit up with BitScrunch and BitScrunch hoardings. And then another time was when we got into the MasterCard Web3 program, right? It's one of the Fortune 500 companies. MasterCard is everywhere. You own a MasterCard, I own a MasterCard. It's literally in everybody's pocket. And for somebody like BitScrunch, who are like at the early days, for us to work with MasterCard was a monumental thing. So yeah.
Nice, that's good. My final question for you, Vijay. I think you might have answered this already, but just to make sure, if you could do it all again, what would you do differently?
I would have done things differently. I would have avoided a lot of early mistakes that I made. I would have raised more money than now. So yeah, altogether, if given a chance again, I would do things way better than what I did in this 2 years.
Fantastic. Vijay, that takes us up for time. It's been an absolute pleasure having you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for being a guest. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your great insights.
Having me again, and I would love to get into your podcast once again if there is a good time.
That concludes another enlightening episode of the Leadership Labs podcast. If you found today's episode thought-provoking and informative, be sure to subscribe to the Leadership Labs on your preferred podcast platform or on YouTube. Thank you once again for joining us on this journey through the Leadership Labs. Until next time.